Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
How about that?
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! The heavyweight champion is taking the mandatory 8-count, and Foreman is as poised as can be!
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
If you get through this dragnet, it's as slippery as a nail in a barrel full of oil.
Pedro Fernandez.
It works for me.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the multi-billion dollar Sports Byline Studios in the city by the bay here, San Francisco, California. Check it. This is Ring Talk. Often imitated but never duplicated, 37, make that 38 plus years now of knocking out all bums. My name is Pedro Fernandez, your modest host. Welcome to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. For the next 2 hours, live on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 217. That's right. We've got a new Sirius XM Satellite Channel. It's 217. Live on 217 Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Of course, live around the world on iHeartRadio, Sports Byline, and a plethora of other internet platforms, including CRN Radio straight up. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Larry Merchant should be here in a little while. The retired HBO godfather, of course, will spend some time with us talking boxing, talking the world at large, of course, like only Larry can. We'll hear a special in hour number two on the Mafia putting a contract out on the life of Don King. Speaking of Don King, the wild-haired promoter, of course, the wire-haired promoter, will do Don King in detail in hour number two as well, in a segment in which we call Don King at Christmas 2014-2015. We'll take it back a few years and see what the wire-haired wonder was all about then. But straight up, it's Don King in hour number two, and of course, the Mafia going after him. It's funny and it's real at the same time, but the bottom line is, Don was a marked man there for a little bit. Straight up, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking to the world of boxing and MMA. Of course, the WBA, the WBC, all these sanctioned bodies can say what they want. But the champ at 168 is Canelo Alvarez. Of course, he's got other guys. There's undefeated David Morrell. There's undefeated David Benavidez. Yes, there are a couple of fights outside of the Charlo fight and the Triple G third fight. Straight up, Canelo and more today on Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Unless I'm wrapped up in your arms, gonna take me with you. Please take me with you. Yes. How high the love.
You know, it's my theory that if Don King was born rich and white, he'd be Donald Trump. And if Donald Trump was born poor and black, he'd be Don King.
Wow! I feel good. Time to bring in the retired HBO godfather himself. I'm talking about Mr. Larry Merchant, Mr. Hall of Fame. How are you this morning, sir?
Pretty good. Overcast day here in Southern California, a little cold. But it's our winter.
Question for you. You know, before we get to boxing, when you were in Philadelphia and Wilt Chamberlain was there, and of course he scored 100 points, I believe, playing for the Philadelphia Warriors at the point in time. How come he couldn't put together a winning team? I mean, he had a winning team with the Lakers, but he couldn't do it. He wasn't the one man army that he should have been. How come?
Wilt Chamberlain was a force of nature individually.
Okay.
He was like 7'1" and very athletic, and he could dominate. But he often didn't know what to do with his talent, when to pass, when to shoot, when to be back on defense. Whatever it was, the team started to depend on him so much that late in games, the team that they were playing knew that they were going to try to get the ball to Wilt somehow near the basket. And they started galvanizing around Wilt and not letting it happen, and Wilt try to force it and blah, blah, blah. But he was not the team player that Bill Russell was. In head-to-head matchups, Wilt would out-rebound him and outscore Russell. But Russell was a bigger force on the court and knew his place and knew how to play team basketball. Russell had played on a high school championship team, on a
USF college team.
Well, at University of San Francisco,
whoever
heard of them, and suddenly with Bill Russell, they won two national championships. And then he went into the NBA and won 11 NBA championships in 13 seasons. So the way that Russell played, also very athletic, but defensive-oriented, pass-oriented, team-oriented, and the rest is history.
You know, I used to go down to a barbecue place here in the city, and I didn't eat the food, but Nate Thurman ran it. He was the former center for the Golden State Warriors, and he told me of all the guys he worked with, he said that Bill Russell was the hardest guy to work against, and that Chamberlain was quite predictable. That was his word, predictable, that Wilt was going to go to the same move over and over and over again.
Well, and in critical moments at the end of the game, that mattered.
We're talking Wilt Chamberlain, of course, the biggest guy for a long time in the world of sports as far as boxing was concerned. He was going to challenge Muhammad Ali in 1967 for the World Heavyweight Championship. Then in 66, they held a press conference at the Houston Astrodome, and Angelo Dundee told Ali, because Angelo told me about this one, he goes, don't stick a fork in Wilt Chamberlain's eye. Just be nice here. Don't stick a fork in his eye. Don't antagonize him. Please try not to antagonize him. We want him to sign the contract. He signed the bout agreement. Now we want him to sign the contract, because this was going to make me big money on closed circuit television, no doubt about that. So Wilt signs the bout agreement, and then Ali trashes him at the press conference at the Houston Astrodome, and then he decides afterwards he's not going to do it. But that was like that was going to be a mega event.
Well, there were a lot of what was going to be major events that never happened. And I'm happy for Wilt's sake that never happened.
I remember Ali, when I brought it up with Ali over in China, he said, do you realize how easy it would have been to hit his jaw? And I said, what do you mean? He goes, it was right there. I said, oh, okay. You know, he's got 6'1" and gets 7'1", but Ali was confident going into that. Godfather, before I'm gonna take you off subject just for one more time. Are we headed to an electoral okay on January 20th? I mean, is the country still rolling in the same direction positively as it was a week ago when you talked about it?
It appears so, but January the 20th is not the key date. That is when you have the formal exchange of power. But I think that Trump thinks there's one other rabbit he can pull out of, he can pull out of the hat or try with congressional approval of the election on May 6th, January 6th, I believe it is. And he hopes to get enough of his Republican buddies to vote against the vote.
Okay, so we're going to have a bunch of guys in Congress vote against, like, 80 million people?
I don't know. It's doubtful. It's highly doubtful. I'm just saying that's one last rabbit he hopes to pull out of the hat.
Okay, last question before we go to the break. You've been around a long time. You ever seen anything like this?
No.
Wow.
No. And you know, I studied civics as a kid in school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought that the way things worked was the way things worked, and they worked pretty good for our country for the best part of the 20th century. So hearing all of this and this one-man rule and laws don't matter and sticking it into the face of everybody out there. You know, it's very upsetting to people of my generation who thought this country was divided in many ways, but not at the ballot box where you counted the votes.
Are you in the mood to stick around for another segment?
You got me.
You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. The Godfather returns to Ring Talk Live Worldwide after the break.
Baby, 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 I got the feeling, baby.
Canelo, congratulations. 13-month layoff. You're facing arguably the top guy at 168 pounds, and you have another brilliant performance. What did you think of your effort tonight?
No, me siento muy bien. La verdad que hice muy buen trabajo después de 13 meses sin pelear. Creo que hice muy buen trabajo con un peleador de mayor peso que yo, campeón mundial, el número uno en este peso. Creo que hice un gran trabajo después de 13 meses. Me siento muy contento. Smith es un gran peleador y pues aquí estamos de regreso. Gracias a toda la gente que pudo estar aquí. Gracias por el apoyo incondicional. Y vamos a seguir haciendo historia. Esta es la era del Canelo.
I did a great job after 13 months of layout. Smith is a great fighter. But like you see, I did a great job. Thanks everybody for coming and support me. I'm so happy.
Was this the best performance of your career?
No, es uno de mis mejores, sin duda, ¿no? Por lo que representa, es uno de los mejores. Pero he tenido grandes retos también. Y viene lo mejor de mi carrera. De verdad que me siento mejor que nunca. Creo que a esta edad me siento un peleador más maduro, más asentado, más fuerte. Y creo que viene lo mejor para mí y para mi equipo.
I feel more mature. I feel better. And of course, it's one of the best, but not the best. I have a lot of challenges during my career. But this is not the most complicated.
To the Godfather, Larry Merchant on the line from Santa Monica, California. Larry, I didn't know that Whitey Bulger was your neighbor down there.
Yeah, he lives a few streets away from me, but I never met the gentleman.
For 14 years!
Well, I guess it was a certain genius for a nut job like him. To hide in plain sight in Santa Monica, California.
Yeah, and when they examined his apartment, he was so slick that he actually took the sheetrock out and reinstalled the sheetrock after sticking $800,000 on the wall. No, I mean, had they not been so crazy and looking for money and tearing the place apart, they would have never found it.
Yeah, well, I have a friend of many years who had an apartment in the same apartment frequently, but didn't know who he was.
Well, that's good for him, because had he found out who he was, it might not have worked out too well. Now, we just heard from the 168-pound world champion, the pound-for-pound king, Saul Alvarez, of course, 54-1, having defeated Callum Smith quite handily. He's got guys at 168 pounds that some people maybe have not heard of, but David Benavidez is 23-0 out of, like, Fresno or Upland, California. He's a WBC champion. And now David Morrell, a former Cuban Olympian, is now the WBA title holder with a record of only 4-0 and 3 knockouts, but he battered a pretty good guy last night. So what I'm trying to say is there are guys at 168 besides Triple G and Charlo for Canelo fight if he decides not to go in that direction. Godfather? Well, Austin, we're going to try to call Larry back here. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking to the world of boxing, the MMA. Once you're going down the records or the resume, the script at 168, of course, Saul Alvarez, number one, Callum Smith, number two, Daniel Jacobs, number three, Benavidez, number four, Billy Joe Sanders, number five, Kyle Plant, number six, Fedor Chukunov, number seven, John Ryder, number eight, the former champion Anthony Durrell. Is he still fighting? Yeah, too bad. Anyway, he's number eight. Bottom line is, you know, there are some names out there for Canelo Alvarez to fight. Of course, I'm excited. I wanted him to fight David Benavidez, but that was like a year and a half ago before Benavidez got hooked on cocaine. Once he got hooked on cocaine, it was like, that was it. I mean, it was just, yeah, I mean, you just couldn't do nothing with it. You just couldn't. So at the end of the day, Benavidez, of course, like, we erased from my boxing memory, per se, and now he's back. He's, as I said, undefeated, says he's got his act together. We'll see. He comes to us, of course, out of Phoenix, but mainly out of Central California. He had a good little following going down there. Unfortunately, the coke is no joke. And, you know, cocaine is, how can I put this? It was a recreational drug in the 70s. And I remember looking at guys and they were able to do cocaine and, you know, they did toots here and there and toots here and there. And then it changed in the 80s. I was a cop and it turned into crack cocaine and became a whole lot powerful. And then all of a sudden people were getting hooked on it. You see people on the streets. And of course that was like the beginning of the homeless epidemic, because now I'm looking around San Francisco and it looks like crack city everywhere. And not everybody's on crack, but there are homeless people. I don't know if you've ever been to our city. It's a beautiful place to live. And I was born and raised here and was a member of the police department for almost a decade. But, you know, it's sort of sad to drive around parts of the city. And we're not talking about just like the bad neighborhoods per se. No. There are homeless people living in rich neighborhoods on rich sidewalks. I don't know how these rich people are dealing with it, but obviously they're not too happy. You've got like a $3 or $4 million house and you got a couple people camped out on your sidewalk. Okay. Now the flip side is, these people should pay a little bit more taxes. Maybe we can get these people off the street and get them some type of a shelter. At the end of the day, the homeless situation is terrible. Let's go back to the weekend boxing. Of course, Tyson Fury, the world heavyweight champion, talking about the Anthony Joshua rematch, or the actual Joshua first fight, of course. Joshua having beaten Andy Ruiz, big deal. I mean, I'm not too happy about that. Why? Because, you know, Ruiz didn't come in shape. He came to camp at 317 pounds. When you come to camp at 317 pounds and you fight at 283, obviously you're not prepared. And had he been in any other weight class, he would have been deemed unfit to box. That's why I think the heavyweight division, they should have some type of physical to go along with the fact that, you know, anything over like 200 pounds or 210 pounds, whatever the weight limit is, you go over that weight limit, you've got to be in shape. You just can't be some big fat pig. I mean, what Andy Ruiz pulled off on the people, the promoters. Hey, the promoters wanted him to come in like that. I mean, he did exactly what they wanted him to do. They wanted Joshua to win. Joshua was the guy. Joshua was a marquee guy. I mean, Auntie Louise, that's what I love to call him, he was just like a fat last-minute replacement. Okay, and that's all it was, a last-minute replacement. Of course, he pulled off the upset when Anthony Joshua brought his chin to him. He brought his chin to Andy Ruiz. That's what happened there, is he exposed that chin and he brought it to him. He was fearless until he got cracked on the chin, much like Hector Camacho was when he got cracked on the chin, of course, by Edwin Rosario. And that fight, was it 1987? Of course, they hooked it up in Madison Square Garden. That sort of was the end of the Macho Man, per se. He got his chin checked, and then from that point forward, he was a safety fighter. Speaking of Camacho, if you haven't seen the Camacho special on Showtime, check it out. It's emotional, it's heart-wrenching, and it's Hector. I mean, it just is. I mean, forget the scene at the border with the cocaine and the kilo in the trunk, and I told you about the time when I had to beg him to come down. I mean, we're in Puerto Rico, and he's going to fight in Carolina. I think it's Carolina, Puerto Rico, and we're based in San Juan, and he doesn't want to come down to the fight. He doesn't want to come to the fight. The promoter tells me he's not coming. I said, what do you mean he's not coming? He goes, he's not coming, Pedro, and you're not getting paid. That was the key thing there, was, and you're not getting paid. And I said, why? Because if Camacho don't show, nobody gets paid. I said, okay, that's the way it is. I'll go get Camacho. Good luck on that one. Well, I went there and I got him. He came back for us. It was a technical draw, I think, after three rounds, he and Jorge Vaca, when he butted Vaca. But the bottom line was, he showed up when I begged him. I would beg him. He was snorting. It was cocaine on the table there in the room, and he's snorting his coke, and he's like out of his mind, and I'm begging him. I'm telling him, listen, man, I got to pay my child support. I have to feed my kid. Please, please, please. And what did Camacho do? Took that last snort, got up, and took care of business. When, of course, showed up at the arena, the fight wasn't much, but the bottom line was, he showed up, and I needed him to show up, because if he didn't show, nobody was getting paid, not the cameraman, and of course, they would have had to do refunds at the arena. The fights were already taking place, but if you don't come up with the main event, you got some problems, and Camacho was the main event, no doubt about that. A favorite son at that point in time in Puerto Rico, of course, Trinidad, had been retired. Trinidad had retired a couple of years before. Camacho was still the rage, per se. And, of course, you got Felix Verdejo came along, and Felix didn't score to fill that void. Juan Manuel Lopez didn't fill that void. In fact, Verdejo getting knocked out like he did by Nakatomi a couple of weeks ago, fortnight ago, showed that his career is over with, okay? The Puerto Ricans forget about Felix Verdejo. I mean, he's not going to be your next Felix Trinidad. If you keep it up, he's going to be your next Wilfred Benitez. And you people know about Wilfred Benitez. Of course, God, I don't want to say this on the air, semi-retarded. I mean, from boxing. I mean, he was in bad shape to begin with. I remember when we were kids, a young guy, and he was here in 84 for the, he was going to fight on the Gordon Ashby card. And we had these conversations all the time, you know. I mean, you want to talk. I mean, you get a guy like Wilfred Benitez in town. He's working out in your gym. He's in your stable. Okay, he's in the same stable as you. I mean, you want to pump this guy for everything you can. His English was limited, but all he wanted to talk about was sex and girlfriends. The guy had like a one-track mind. And then I realized he didn't have a one-track mind. That's all he had in his mind. That's all he could think about. It was boxing and or girls. There was nothing in between. No education, no life planning, nothing at all. I mean, he couldn't do anything on his own. Couldn't even tie his own shoes, basically. I mean, Benitez was a mark back in 84 for pugilistic dementia. Of course, we had that sparring session, the two of them, at Newman's Gym. First one, I was scared to death to throw any punches. Didn't throw too many. Second one, I wasn't all that scared. I did throw punches, and he didn't throw any back. He sort of stayed in the corner, much like he did against, I can't think of the guy's name, against that Arab guy. But the bottom line is, at the end of the night, Wilfred Benitez is in bad shape right now in Puerto Rico, of course. Really bad shape. Speaking of good shape, let's go on the positive note. Saw some pictures of Roberto Santa Claus Duran for Christmas, kicking back in Panama City. Of course, they're on lockdown there, down there in Panama, having KO'd COVID along with his wife. Of course, that was like a couple of months ago, but he's staying in. He's staying safe. He had a couple of beer bottles next to him, but he had the Santa Claus suit going. Just Roberto, you know? And when I was looking at him at this picture, I said to myself, I was thinking about Benitez. You know how Benitez is basically, and the reason why I use this word, and I don't like to use this word, but the reason why I use it is I can't use another word that fits it. He's retarded. He that's the best way I could put it. He is severely retarded from boxing, from the pugilist dementia, call it what you want. Okay, the bottom line is he was sparring with world-class guys at 13 years old. I mean, guys who were going the distance with Roberto Duran, he's sparring in the gym and getting the best of it 13 and 14 years old. Now, you know that kind of punishment, the residual effects of that, they're gonna play hard, and they're gonna come true. And there's no doubt about it, that's what we're seeing right now as far as Wilfred Benitez is concerned. Can't take care of himself, can't walk, can't talk, can't do anything. At the end of the day, as I said, a blight on boxing. But, you know, his father, Gregorio, and I talked with his father a couple of times. His father talks very horrible English. But I talked with his father a couple of times, and I asked him, I said, you know, not training him, not having him in shape, and then putting him in the Sugar Ray Leonard fight in 1979, I said, you know, all you did was get him down to weight. I said, I wanted to tell the father, you should be arrested for child abuse. I mean, come on. You're training your kid, and you only got him in the gym 10 days for a Sugar Ray Leonard fight? 10 days for a Sugar Ray Leonard fight? And you wonder, and your guy goes 15? Fight semi-competitive, but Leonard wins, going away, no doubt about that, as far as the scores are concerned. And of course, then Leonard stops him late in the fight. I mean, but what was a father thinking? What was Gregorio thinking, putting his kid in the biggest fight of all time against a 1976 Olympic gold medalist, the hottest shot in all of boxing right now? I'm talking about Sugar Ray Leonard. And of course, the rematch never happened. Why didn't it happen? Benitez fell apart. Went to 154, went to 160, had a good showing at 154 against Maurice Hope, knocked him out with one punch, knocked his tooth out as well. But outside of that, he never shined again in the world of professional boxing. And of course, the 80s, he came here to San Francisco. After that, he had a few more fights. He even lost to our own Pat Lawler. Of course, Pat Lawler, the overachiever that he is. Pat Lawler beat Wilfred Benitez, Roberto Duran, and Rene Arredondo. Three world champions. Of course, he beat them way past their peak. But he still beat him. So knock Pat Lawler if you want. I mean, you know, he may be not the most reliable guy in the world if you want him for an event. But the bottom line is, he beat three Hall of Famers. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Mike Tyson's fighting again. You interested in coming back to fight Mike Tyson, maybe?
Yeah, I'd love to fight him, man. I could take him now, Pedro.
You could take him? Why would you say you could take him now? What's the difference between now and 1986?
Well, because he's old and slow, and I'm so fat. All I need to do, give me 2 months, at least 8 to 10 weeks to train for him. I can, my boxing skills are better than his.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
It must really suck to be that dumb.
That was Jay Jaco talking about Mike Tyson. Of course, he fought Mike Tyson, Jay Jaco, all over the world. He had a book called Pugilistic Spontaneity, or Spontaneous Pugilistic, something like that. Bottom line is, he's got a book out, as he's been all over the world. He was with me in China. Great guy, David Jaco. Maybe we'll have him on the show in the near future. Pound for pound, the world of boxing, we talked about Alvarez being number one. Heavyweights, no question about that. Tyson Fury 30 and Zip, of course, that one draw to Deontay Wilder. Of course, he erased that in the rematch when he obliterated, when he knocked out, when he destroyed, when he took away the heart. What more could he do to Deontay Wilder in that second fight that he did? I mean, come on. He ran him out of town. Essentially ran him out of town. Earl Spence, of course, coming in number 3 as far as the box rec, top 10 pound for pound. And I got a problem with that. Terrence Crawford, why don't you just go back to lightweight? There's a lot of money at lightweight. Go back to 140 pounds. You want to go down to 140 pounds. You want to fight Manny Pacquiao? Go down to 140 pounds. Of course, Deontay Wilder, the aforementioned Deontay Wilder, having lost that one fight, 42-1. But when you look at that 42 guys that he fought, 38 guys are 38 guys like me. Okay, for the most part, he brought a lot of hobos, a lot of stiffs. So 42-1, not really. That one draw, of course, with Tyson Fury, and the one loss to Tyson Fury as well. Joshua, as we talked about earlier, the bad chin, 24-1. I expect him to get knocked out again. Manny Pacquiao, 41 years old. 42 years old. Now at welterweight. Holy cow, 42 years old at welterweight. I want him to drop down to 140 because I think that would be his best weight at this time. Of course, he wants to have 2 fights in 2021. Where he's going to have these fights, we don't know, but he is still the biggest attraction, one of the biggest attractions in boxing outside of Canelo. Gennady Golovkin, Triple G, coming off that win, of course, a week ago. Looking pretty good now. We'll see 41-1, and with that one draw, the one loss and the one draw to the same, of course, Canelo Alvarez. Do I think Gennady Golovkin is going to be able to beat Canelo Alvarez if they fight again? Nah, he's probably going to get stopped this time. I mean, he's older, he's slower. His body looked good. Physically, he looked fantastic. I mean, for 38 years old, but I just don't think he's going to be going places. How about Alexander Povetkin? Having knocked out, I mean, come on, you got to give Povetkin some props. I mean, the guy goes into a fight, he's a decided underdog. Dillian White's supposed to come in, he's the promoter's guy. Barry Hearn's like, got him in pimp jackets and all this kind of good stuff, limos, all that kind of good stuff. And what happens, he knocks him out with one punch, slips in an uppercut, boom, knocks him cold. Of course, that was in August 22nd across the pond in the UK. Now, they were supposed to have the rematch, Povetkin tested positive for the COVID virus, so that fight is on hold maybe until late January. But you got to give Povetkin some credit. That was the punch of the year, I think, without a doubt, as far as the world of professional boxing. And we rank him number 9, as does BoxRec, in the pound-for-pound rankings. Now, of course, the number 10 guy. They rank him number 10, but I think he's a lot higher than that. I think he's probably one of the pound-for-pound kings. I'm talking about Teofimo Lopez. How can I say that? 16 fights. Kid from Brooklyn, New York. Of course, the takeover. Because he is the takeover. The takeover has taken place. It took over. When he gangster slapped. I wanted to use the B word, but when he gangster slapped Vasyl Lomachenko. I mean, he ran him out of town. He won the first 7 rounds. I mean, you want to do simple math, the fight's over with. It's a 12-round fight. You win more than 6, guess what? You've won. So he won the fight already on points. All he had to do was not get knocked out for the last 5 rounds. He did that. I mean, he won, Vasyl Lomachenko maybe won 4 of the last 5 rounds. And I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt there, maybe in one of those 2 of those rounds. You know what I mean? Come on. He didn't win. So him bitching all this crap on the web this week, you know, where he wants the rematch, listen, you didn't respect the kid from Brooklyn to begin with. Of course, his people are from Honduras. But you didn't respect him to begin with. You didn't put a rematch clause in the contract, and I think that was purposely not put there by promoter Bob Arum, because I think Bob Arum just wanted you out of the picture. I mean, Vasyl Lomachenko, as good a fighter as he is, he doesn't make money. And what I mean by that is, he doesn't turn a pay-per-view crank. Nobody wants to tune in to watch Lomachenko on pay-per-view. You can't tell me he can sell. He just doesn't. He can't. He hasn't in the past. He won't in the future. Why? He's not American, and he's not really all that exciting, per se. I mean, he chips away at people, and he beats a lot of people, and makes people quit, but not in an exciting fashion. I think that Teofimo Lopez, the takeover, per se, just exposed him for what he was, a 32-year-old guy that was going on 90. I mean, figure this out. 399-1 as an amateur, right? 14-1, and he evidently erased that one loss. And then he came back as a pro, and he was like 14-1-1. And then, of course, he comes back, and he gets lit up like a White House Christmas tree in a fight that he's not supposed to. And people are saying, oh, he was injured. Man, I don't want to hear that injury kind of stuff. Lopez had a couple of injuries, I think a knee and a hand. So, I mean, there were some bad injuries going into that fight for the Teofimo camp. In fact, they thought about pulling out of it, but they couldn't. They realized this was their moment to shine in the sun. And guess what? They did. As far as the rest, rest of the top 20 is concerned, of course, Spence looking to fight with Crawford. Crawford and Spence talking about money. Crawford says Spence has got to take 40%. Spence says Crawford's got to take 40%, so they're probably going to do 50-50 on that. And the wild card there, though, is going to be Sean Porter. Sean Porter, of course, the former WBC title holder, and he's a good fighter. There's no doubt about it. I mean, what is he now, 31-3 with a draw? He's ugly. He doesn't fight pretty. I mean, he just brings it and 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 brings it some more. Okay? So at the end of the day, Sean Porter is a worthy, worthy opponent. Sean Porter, I think, can beat either Spence or Terrence Crawford. Spence now, of course, coming off that win a couple of weeks ago against Danny Garcia. Danny Garcia just wasn't the test. Danny didn't step in. Danny never stepped up. Danny just sat there and said, I'm going to go 12 rounds, Dad, okay? I mean, and Dad said, okay, Danny, go 12 rounds. Because that's all he did was want to go 12 rounds. I mean, he never initiated, he never stepped across the line. You know, there's this line in boxing, and whether it's in different parts of the ring, but you have to step across that line in order to win the fight. You have to initiate things. You have to get into it. Danny never got into it. All Danny was looking for was not get hurt and go 12 rounds and get paid. Of course, at the end of the night, he did so, and I think he should never fight again. Why do I say that? His heart's not there. I mean, give it up, man. Just give it up. Give it up. Of course, another guy that should give it up, Mikey Garcia, fighting at 147. Come on, man. You're like a lightweight. I don't get that. Why do you want to fight at 147? Because at the end of the day, you know, the residual effects of fighting bigger guys with smaller gloves, it'll come back and pay. It comes back and pays to a lot of guys. Wilfred Benitez, think about him. Anyway, going through the rest of the top 20 as far as pound for pound is concerned, the guy that stands out, WBA 130-pound champion and WBA 135-pound champion, Gervonta Davis. Of course, they call him the tank. He's got a bit of an attitude as far as his outside of the ring attitudes are concerned. But, you know, who cares? The guy doesn't have to be a choir boy in order to get things done. I think he's a good fighter. I think he's got good skills. And, of course, him coming off that knockout win a fortnight ago. I mean, what can you say about his performance that wasn't spectacular? Because there's no doubt about it. I mean, Mr. Cruz came to fight. Leo Santa Cruz came to fight. He's a game dude, a current champion at 130. Took the title from him at 130. Of course, the referee, Rafael Ramos, stopped that fight right at the right time because there was no doubt about it. When you're a loser, you're a loser. Before that, he stopped Yuri Gamboa. And, of course, Gamboa coming off the fight recently with Devin Haney. Devin Haney, of course, he's San Francisco lightweight that says he needs millions of dollars to fight Teofimo Lopez. Lopez says he wants $5 million to fight Devin Haney. They shouldn't even fight. Devin Haney's not in that league yet. 24-0, yeah, he's got the WBC title, but like Teofimo said and Socrates Palmer have said in the past, of course, he's really like the internet, the email champion. This was the email champion. Anyway, the guys who want to look at 135 are Davis, obviously, my man, Ryan Garcia, and people say to me, Pedro, come on, man. You're going off on Ryan Garcia. Well, you know, I'm a little bit smarter than some people, and I see talent there. I see boxing talent there. I just don't see some guy that's, how can I put this, just a pretty face. And he's not. You can't knock people out with one punch the way he does and be like, you know, not the real deal. They call him King Rye. What's he now? 20-0. Didn't have that good of an amateur record. Lost one more fight than I did, though, as an amateur. I think he was like 20-15. I think I was 38-14. But he's 20-0 now, 17 kills, of course. Going to take on Luke Campbell. And what's funny is that Aaron was talking about Luke Campbell possibly beating Ryan Garcia and, of course, him wanting Teofimo Lopez to fight Luke Campbell after this. Bob, you're dreaming. Okay, it ain't going to happen. This ain't going to happen. But Campbell comes in this fight, no doubt about that, a live foe at 20-3. He went the distance for Lomachenko, but I'm telling you, this kid's for real. I mean, yeah, he's been roughed up in sparring. We saw him get punked out by Rolly Romero down there, of course, in the Mayweather gym in Las Vegas. But I'm telling you, I think he's a real deal. People say to me, he's just some internet bot. I don't think he is an internet bot. You want to talk about internet bots? Look at Devin Haney, 25-0. And what did he went? We went 12 rounds with Yuri Gambo, who everybody else had knocked out, who everybody else had just, I mean, a shop worn for him in Cuba. What's Cuba, like the 76 Olympics? No, not quite back that far, but the bottom line is he is an old man. Let's go to some of the emails, of course, coming here via the text. Who's the best referee? I don't think any referees stand out. There's one referee, I can't remember his name right now, and it just slips my mind, but he's in that Las Vegas crew. He's a black guy, and he was part of, with Richard Steele and all those guys. He's part of the school there. Can't remember his name right now, but he's probably the best referee. As far as judges are concerned, and people say to me that the judging of Julie Letterman in the Vasyl Lomachenko Teofimo Lopez fight was an indictment of her ability to score. I didn't think so. She had 11-1. I had it 9-3. What's the difference? Two rounds? Come on, two rounds? I mean, you see things differently in two rounds? The bottom line is that was a rout going away. And for you people who still moan and bitch about that fight, all I can say is live with it. Get over with it. The bottom line is it's done. You are tuned to Ring Talk. Check it. You're live. You're inside looking into the world of boxing, MMA, of course. Ryan Garcia and King and Luke Campbell are going to go. They're going to go on the Zone. This is going to be January 2nd. That's really the next big fight, the only big fight that's on the calendar as far as I'm concerned. The rest of the boxing calendar sort of looks a little bit ho-hum. And if you think the boxing calendar looks ho-hum, you should look at the UFC schedule. There's nothing on it. I mean, they've got Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor and some type of rematch going down in a couple of weeks. But outside of that, they have nothing on the agenda, nothing on the schedule. They're going to do things in Dubai again. Of course, they can get away with things over there as far as everything. I mean, it's Dana's game. I mean, listen, anything outside of the Nevada State Athletic Commission, I mean, they sort of keep a close eye on Dana, but outside of those guys, man, the rest of the athletic commissions, Dana just runs roughshod over them. He does. Look what he did in Florida. I mean, he was opening up events and having events open to the public and said that the UFC was like a necessary, like a store or like an emergency hospital. You had to have the UFC during that pandemic. Of course, the governor down there, Governor DeSantis, Ron DeSantis, said that the UFC was, you know, it had to happen. Yeah, okay, and the WWE as well. Why? Because they contribute to his properties and to his campaigns, probably. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Do I think that Campbell will get knocked out next week? Yes, I think that Luke Campbell will not go the 12-round distance. In fact, I will say it boldly right here on the air. If Luke Campbell wins this fight, I will eat an 8x10-inch piece of paper on the air. I haven't said that in many, many years, but I will do so. If Luke Campbell beats Ryan Garcia, I will eat an 8x10-inch piece of paper on the air. Something I've never done in 38 years. I came close when Jeannie Williams, of course, gave Holyfield that draw with Riddick Bowe. With Lennox Lewis. But outside of that, you know, pretty good. So I'm putting the paper on the line. I'll eat an 8x10-inch piece of paper if Luke Campbell can beat Ryan Garcia June the 2nd. January the 2nd, of course, on The Zone. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Just what do you think of him as a fighter, huh?
Well, his footwork's lousy. He can't counterpunch. His timing stinks. And he doesn't breathe properly.
But you like him as a person.
Well, he has a nice smile.
The guitar of the great Jeff Tamalier, Pittsburgh, California. Pleasant Hill, California. My man Jeff, of course, formerly with Tower of Power, Jefferson and Starship, Jefferson Airplane. Bottom line is, Jeff's been around. That guitar kicks ass. You are tuned to, I call him the Hendrix of Funk. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking to the world of boxing and MMA. Hour number two upcoming on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, iHeartRadio, SiriusXM, Satellite Radio Channel 217, and like 1,000 other internet platforms. You might be listening to the show. You might be listening to the show, of course, in delayed as far as a podcast is concerned. Of course, the podcasts are at iTunes, and they're all over the world. But the bottom line is they are also at Anchor.fm. In fact, you can catch the latest Larry Merchant, Nothing But Larry segments. So they are at Anchor.fm, Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it out. Also, the Sock Fest. I don't know whether to call them Sockfest or Sockcast. I'm talking about Socrates Palmer, of course. Boxing's PhD. We go into depth each and every Saturday. But I don't know why I'm cutting out his segments and putting them as far as a podcast screen. And I don't know whether to call them a Sockcast or a Sock, you know, bottom line is, or a Sockfest. But the bottom line is, we're having fun with Socrates Palmer. Boxing's true PhD, of course. He is available at anchor.fm as well. The Ring Talk Live Worldwide Checklist, of course. Hour number two. Was going to depth with Don King. Don King, of course, talking about the holidays a few years back when he was doing interviews quite regularly. Of course, we used to talk on the phone, well, I won't say weekly, but bi-weekly, a couple of times a month, things like that. And then a few months ago, we started dropping off as far as the phone calls were concerned. And then people were telling me that his health is starting to suffer. And then I talked to him a couple of times, and he told me one time, well, young man, I'm playing a good game with a short stick, which sort of told me that he thought he was dying, but he was trying to get by it the best he could. I didn't know how to take that. But at the end of the day, he's like 88, 89 years old. He didn't take care of himself. Not like Bob Arum. I mean, he didn't smoke weed and take care of himself all his life. Don King drank whiskey all day long. I mean, sometimes he would like sleep 2 hours. He would put me to bed, or I would go to bed at the MGM Grand working like the Tyson Frank Bruno fight back at the MGM Grand, the Mandalay Bay in those days. I'd go to bed like it, I don't know, 2 o'clock, 2:30 in the morning, and there'd be messages on my phone at 4:30 in the morning. In other words, he'd get 2 hours sleep, and 2 hours later, he'd call up, come on, we're going to do this with Switzerland. Get down here. We need to do this with Italy, blah, blah, blah. Bottom line is, Don King is an emotional guy, but he is the hardest working man in show business, no doubt about that. So we talk about Don King with Sammy the Bull Gravano and the mafia hit on Don King, and hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide next. After the news, Don King, the Mafia, and more after the news on Ring Talk Live Worldwide.